This is the First Time Podcast.
Part reality series.
Part writer's masterclass. It's a podcast about the first time
you publish a book.
I'm Kate Mildenhall.
And I'm Catherine Collette. Welcome to The First Time. The First Time podcast has a newsletter. It will go out monthly-ish. To sign up, go to our website, thefirsttimepodcast.com, and click on the Sign Up to Our Newsletter link. Hey, Kate.
Hello, Catherine.
How are you going?
I'm very well, thank you very much. What are we going to talk about?
We are going to talk about international rights.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that you sold the UK rights for Skylarking. Can you talk a little bit about how that happened?
I can. So international rights for Skylarking were sold to the UK, to Legend Press. They were the first and only rights that sold at this point in time. I was working at the time. I had like a couple of missed calls from my publisher, from the head of, Black Ink. And when I got onto her, she was like, we've sold UK. And I didn't at that time realize how significant that was because, as you talk about in this, in the interview that's coming up with Jane Watkins, and as we've talked about before, expectations are sometimes much higher.
Ignorance, well, you have no sense of what the norm is.
You don't. So, you know, here I am thinking, yeah, of course they'll sell and then everything else will sell, right? And it wasn't until after that I started going, has whoever, insert, great Australian writer here, sold their rights to the amazing book that I just loved? And people would be like, no, that hasn't sold outside Australia and New Zealand. So I started to realise then what a big deal was. That's how I sold those ones. Nothing after that sold.
And this is sort of a point of interest for people, perhaps. I remember that when you were negotiating the contract with Text, mm-hmm. you had received some advice about international rights.
I have indeed. Thank you very much, Kelly Gardner. Kelly had recommended to me to put in a reversion clause in my contract, which so it didn't exist there, and I put it in on her advice, and people should speak to ASA about contract advice if they're in this position. And it's basically a clause to say that after 2 years, any overseas territories that hadn't been exploited or sold reverted to me. So now I have those Skylarking rights back, which is terrific because that means that then I can determine what happens with them going forward.
So, and you don't have to answer this, in talking to agents about second books, will you or have you, do you talk about those rights as well?
It is a point of interest. Yes.
Yeah.
Within those discussions if they were happening.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Watch this space. What about you? You sold more international rights. Tell me, and they're not out yet. So you've sold the rights. Right.
This is why this feels very topical for me at the moment. So the Helpline comes out in the UK and the US and Canada and Italy in July this year.
Italy. Oh my goodness.
So I haven't seen the Italian cover, but I've seen the other two covers.
And the I haven't seen the UK cover.
The UK cover is quite similar to the Australian cover.
Oh, to the Australian. US is very different though.
US is different and I love it.
It's amazing.
I'm actually going to see if they'll send me the artwork without the helpline.
Oh, yes. Oh, gorgeous.
It is. Yeah, it's really nice. It's really colourful and it's a woman lurking behind a pot plant in a way of hiding but not hiding.
Yeah, highly stylized. Very cool. Yes, it would look great as a print.
Yeah, I really, really like it.
Okay, so they're all coming out.
They're all coming out.
Where were you when you heard about these? Like, how did this all happen?
So it's funny thinking about this, reflecting back what, because you sort of try to remember the order of events, which are never very interesting to other people, but to you yourself,
it's important to get the timeline right in your head.
Did that happen when? I think interest for me really ramped up around London Book Fair.
Yep.
So that's in, I think it's, it's April-ish.
Yeah, it just happened.
So in the lead up, Text had put together a catalogue of their own books and authors and they were taking it to London Book Fair. they, because I also had sold international rights to text.
Yes.
They did all the negotiations.
Yeah.
So, you know, Jacinta had done all the negotiations here, but was sort of out of the process, which meant probably like you, you're quite out of the loop.
Yeah.
Aren't you? Which is completely, completely unexpected.
Yeah.
But I think the catalogue that Text had put together, I saw for the first time on social media, and that was a cool...
That's really exciting.
That was a very cool moment.
Yeah. So then did you hear from, like, how does it work? So you had an agent intermediary.
Yeah.
Are you getting updates about any interest or...?
Well, so Text engage agents in the US, the UK, and then... That agent talks to Text, and then Text, for the most part, talk to Jacinta, and Jacinta talks to me. So you definitely, you know.
Further down the line.
There's,
there's some delay there.
But it was interesting for London Book Fair. There was, you know, which, and nothing has happened of this, but it was very, very exciting at the time. There was a bit of film interest. And this was at a time when the book was not actually finished.
Yes. So, this was the guy. From from LA.
Yeah.
What was his name?
Jerry.
Jerry, that's
Jerry
right, Jerry.
In LA. That was cool. Was an agent in LA that was looking after that for us. I don't even know who engaged him, whether that was Jacinta or anyway.
That's
I've never
cool.
met Jerry, never spoken to Jerry. But I also had a couple from memory of film producers email me sort of cold and saying, hey, we've heard about this book.
And do you pass them straight on to Jacinta? Them.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But
the beauties
super
of an
cool.
agent. Very cool. Very cool. Tell me what
so
about...
So new stuff was happening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I suppose was the
So then
thing.
When...
So then, so stuff was sort of, things were kind of happening around London Book Fair. At the same time, maybe a bit before, maybe a bit after, Text had put me in contact with a couple of editors in the US.
Yeah.
And so I had to get up really early. They were all in New York.
Are you doing phone or Skype?
Doing phone based. And they were sort of providing feedback on the book and just chatting, that sort of thing. Amazing. Like, that was really cool.
That was huge. I remember this period and it just being
like
intensely exciting sort of, for all of us.
It was so exciting. And so they ended up, there were three American publishers that were interested in the book and they had a best and final offer process. So basically on a Tuesday at 10 a.m. in New York, each of these three publishers had to put in their best and final offer.
Yeah.
Because of the timing, I was going to bed when that was happening.
Or attempting to.
Yeah.
You knew it was happening.
Yeah.
You weren't going
so,
to bed.
Phenomenal. So knew that I would wake up in the morning, knew that there would be offers.
Yeah.
So the closest thing you can, just like Christmas, really.
Oh, did you sleep?
Not like just
not
tossed
at
and
all.
Turned, kept checking my phone.
Oh my gosh. Did Connie try and take it off you? Put it under the bed? Come on.
Well,
get
he was probably as desperately
True.
Checking it. Anyway, so woke up in the morning, you know, scroll. But of course, because of that, you know, how many people are in the line, you really are the last person to find out. So you're sort of waiting. That
did you send off any terse
process,
emails? Waiting,
no,
guys, waiting.
Text, waiting. That ended up going for 3 days, which was just back and forth of different people offering different things.
But were you aware of this, the three-day process?
At the end of each day, Jacinta would call and she'd say, okay, this is where things are at. So this person – so the complication was that some publishers – so there were three American publishers and there was a Canadian publisher or a couple of publishers, at least two in Canada. And so there were different combinations of territories. So some wanted – the whole of North America, so US and Canada. Some wanted just US, some wanted Canada. Some had relationships with the UK as well. So then it was just this whole sort of elaborate process. Pretty phenomenal.
This is why it's so good doing this, because when we're having that conversation when we're like, why isn't the agent calling us back or why isn't the agent looking at my emails? Partly because they're doing stuff like this. For their existing clients, high level, back and forth, you know, like that's an incredible amount of work, conversation, back and forth, communication as well, just between so many different parties.
Totally. And the other thing that was interesting, so I remember the going to bed thing, audio rights was a really big deal.
Yep.
I had had a world rights offer by an Australian audio producer.
Yep.
Hadn't accepted it yet, but all the American publishers wanted US audio rights to the extent that potentially the deal would have fallen through if I had at that stage sold world rights.
Yeah.
Just another.
So where did they?
Point,
where did the audio rights end up going?
Well, so I sold to an Australian for ANZ, and then the rest went to the US.
With the publishing deal.
With the publishing deal.
Okay.
So that was Jacinta's. Like that was really good of Jacinta because the offer was good for world rights here, but she held back.
Okay.
Until
knowing that that was another discussion that needed to happen.
I think not because that was an established thing, because I think audio is
all,
a bit of a...
Yeah, in flux. Like, I remember people saying that to us.
So that was very interesting. The other thing I remember post, so when this was happening and maybe before the best and final offers for the US, Jacinta had been at London Book Fair and...
I know what you're going to say.
So she called me up. I remember I was in the car at the time. And so we sort of had this conversation. She was like, okay, so there's this Canadian offer and this is happening and you know, super exciting. As we finished up the phone call, she said, so just to recap, so you've sold in Spain, you've sold in, I don't know,
Holland.
What's another? Holland and
Germany.
Yeah. And, you know, just made this passing comment. And I was like, what?
You're losing your mind at this point.
Absolutely losing my mind. Heart pounding, just thinking, oh, my God. And then she said, oh, wait, that's Robert Hillman.
I love it so much.
So
this is what I mean.
His book is also good.
Yeah, his book's great, and you can buy it in Spanish or Dutch or German as well. But, you know, we have to understand this, like, deep
but this
jet lag.
Is it, though, which I
craziness.
Talk about with Jane in the upcoming episode. The experience of publication, you know, you have these moments where everything is huge and
amazing
and then you have very grounding moments.
Yeah, and you got to – the skill, I suppose, that you learn over time is – or you attempt to learn is to how to ride that, right? How to ride those dips and rises. Wow. Okay, so what are you going to do to promote and publicise the helpline?
We're totally not.
We're totally not.
Well, this is – so I have a grant to go to the States in August.
Amazing.
So I thought I should visit – I'll visit the US publisher.
Yes.
And I'll visit the UK publisher.
Yes.
And I sent emails to both saying, hey, I'll be in the area.
Yep.
Do you want to set up a few events for me?
And what did they say?
Which also I think is something that you had said, you know, people go over, you know, do it, go and see.
Because, of course, they can't necessarily. I remember Legend asking if I was coming over and I was like, well, no, you know, I can't afford to come over. You're not going to send me over. And because that all happened before Skylarking had even come out here, I didn't realise the legwork, I suppose, of selling a book. And that stuff. And of course, if I had have said yes, I'd go over. Yeah, I was going to have to pay for my flight and everything else. But also,
a big investment.
Yeah, but also I would have been able to go to bookstores and I would have. And now I think, okay, yeah, I would do that differently. I wouldn't see that as such a black and white kind of, well, no, I can't afford to. I would see it as investment, you know, my own investment in how the book might do.
Well, I wrote.
Oh, God.
They're lovely. So I wrote to the US first. I was like, events, I could do bookshops, I could do this.
What did they say?
Well, they said.
They said no?
Well, they said, and they said it so nicely. Basically, they said that really an overseas debut author is not going to pull like a crowd. So their wording was more around for a debut author, we rely on local connections to pull a crowd, which you actually see. Manifest in your own experience.
Of course.
Australia. But it was, yeah. It was.
So what are you
going
to do?
Well, I'm still going to meet them.
Great.
Which I realise is actually the important thing.
It's delightful. You've got to
meet
You just wow them with your general levels of charisma and just say, you know, and then you'll have an event before you even leave.
And then the American agent. So Tech sent an email to each of their agents in the US and the UK saying, you know, doing intros and that sort of stuff.
Nice.
And my American agent came back straight away and said, I'll take you out for lunch.
Great.
How nice is that?
Lunch, delightful. I love it. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
We want photos and updates for the whole experience.
So we've got good news and bad news
we
this
have,
episode, don't we?
We have. I always ask for the bad news first.
Same. Yep. I was just about to ask you that.
Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
Bad news first. We are taking a short-ish break.
We are. You're not going to hear from us next fortnight.
It's like a winter break.
Oh, it is like a winter break, particularly a literary winter break, because we know how much stuff goes on in winter in Melbourne. Yes.
Melbourne Writers Festival.
There is. Then you can head off to Bendigo for their Writers Festival. I'm sure there's some other little festivals in there too.
Is Brisbane, or Brisbane September?
Yeah, Brisbane.
We're not actually involved in any of those festivals.
We're not at all. There's fires you can curl up in front of with a book.
It's heaven.
Yeah. So it'll be fine. You guys are going to be fine without us.
And normal programming, yeah, we'll resume in September.
In the spring. We'll be back in the springtime.
We will have a lot to talk about.
We will, because Catherine will have been to the US and back.
Amazing.
Seen her book in bookstores, which will be so exciting.
It'll be fabulous. And Kate is?
I will have headed north with my family up to the top of WA and back down the centre of Australia. So we're taking 2 months off.
Atypical route, isn't it?
It is atypical. Our very dearest friends are living up in a little place called Yearly between Fitzroy Crossing and Halls Creek. So we're going to visit them and spend their winter holidays with them up in the territory.
Amazing sand.
Mm-hmm. No work. I'm working. I'm planning on the
that
idea.
That kind of feels like good news, but let's keep going with more good news then. Kate, I think, is the waiting over?
The waiting, Catherine, is over. So for any listeners who've just joined us today, all of this season, I have been waiting to hear from various people, but mostly I've been waiting on news from an agent. And the good news is,
Drum roll.
I now have an agent to, nurture my book out into the world. I am delightfully represented by Pippa Masson at Curtis Brown.
In addition to selling your future novels to the publisher of your choice, she can also advise on literary tattoos.
Oh my gosh. I really hope she does, because I did tell her, look, Josh Pomari told me that this is what you do. So that's why I came to you. It's all very exciting and huge
and
relief,
very, very
really.
Well deserved.
Huge relief. So when we come back in September, hopefully we just continue to give you all the good news.
We've got some really fun guests lined up.
Oh my gosh, we have big guests lined up.
Maybe you will have some more good news to share.
Hopefully we shall. Until then, good people, enjoy your winter break, read excellent books, and write all your words. It's a good time for writing, I find. Lots of darkness, lots of rain on the roof. Hopefully there's rain on the roof. You could spend some of your time checking out our Patreon page, First Time Podcast. Just search for us in Patreon. We are always so grateful. Did you see my little post? We've had
$500
from our patrons, which is amazing and really helps us with paying our fabulous sound producer, Phoebe, who's sitting in there.
Both
little smile.
In.
And trying to help us out with some costs as we head to Canberra and Sydney in the second half of this year to run some workshops and speak to some fabulous Australian writers. Have a great time in the US.
You too. WA.
Woohoo.
I've never been.
I'll tell you all about it when we come back. See ya.
Bye. In this episode, we chat to text publishing publicist Jane Watkins about book tours, expectations, and holding authors' hands. We're here today with Jane Watkins, who is not only a publicist at text publishing, but also my publicist at text publishing. Okay, a little bit about Jane. Recently, she led the publicity campaigns for Catherine Collett's The Helpline, Claire Wright's You Daughters of Freedom, Judith Brett's From Secret Ballot to Democracy Sausage, Melanie Cheng's Room for a Stranger, and Graham Simsion's number one best-selling novel, The Rosie Result. Before working in book publishing, Jane spent about a decade as a journalist, mostly in tabloid news. Welcome, Jane.
Thanks, Catherine.
So how do you think journalism has helped you in publicity? Like, is it because tabloid, I suppose you would have a really good sense of what sorts of things people, readers, are interested in.
Yeah. So that's something called news sense. So having either an innate or learned sense of what will grab people's attention, what will solicit emotion from people. So that's something that is very useful in publicity, because publicity is about garnering attention from journalists, but also from the general public. So that's something that's very helpful in publicity. Just general skills that you have as a journalist that are very helpful. Writing, researching is very helpful. Just always looking for leads to leverage in publicity, like someone who you might think, or you might know, oh, this person has an interest in this type of book, or this person I know knows this person. So that's something that's very helpful, that research angle. Having to hunt to eat, like having a real hunger and pursuing opportunities.
Yep.
I think that's a real useful skill as a publicist as well.
Good one. And so what's the difference between publicity and marketing? That always seems very obvious to people that work in both of those things, but as an outsider.
Okay, so I'm not an outsider and it's not always.
Oh, no, I mean as an outsider, looking at
it. I think that's a really intelligent question, because I think it's not always immediately apparent. I think a safe way to distinguish between the two is the amount, is whether money is changing hands. If marketing will often pay for an advert, or, there's often some kind of in-kind transaction going on, where publicity, it's all just free.
Yeah.
So everything I get, I have to get off genuine interest.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So we'll talk a little bit about publicity for the Helpline, but also publicity in general. Mm-hmm. You work at Text Publishing. Mm-hmm. How many authors do you look after altogether?
Catherine Collette, you're my only author.
Oh, well.
No, I
end of interview.
I would really love to know how many authors you think I have, because I answer in that way because...
Everyone is special. We're all special.
Well, no, authors obviously are too smart to believe that they are the only author, but there's definitely like this idea that publicists are meant to make every author feel like you're the only author I work on. So that's my official answer. Feel free to please edit out whatever follows.
I'll approach this another way. How many books would Text publish a month?
Sometimes about 10, up to 10. Sometimes not so much, not so many.
You would put publicity effort into each of those 10 books, or more the Australian-based ones, or a mix?
Well, an often accurate way to determine what might get a lot of publicity effort behind it would be if it were a local author, because Text would be the originating publisher in that instance. But because if it's an overseas title, it might have an overseas publisher who would be leading that publicity campaign. But that's not always the case. Another thing with Text is that we don't, at least in publicity, we don't backlist authors. So it's not as if we work on an author and then they're out of our sphere. So essentially, like, any person who has been published by Text and hasn't moved on to another publisher,
then
we're working on them. We're working on their publicity.
Oh, so interesting. And so when an author's book comes out, I know in my own experience, we spent a lot of time together around that publication date. How this sort of this theory or this thing that people talk about where they say, oh, you get 2 weeks with a, or you get 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. You've talked about the backlist, but is that sort of like, is that intense period? How long does that generally last?
I wouldn't say that there is even a good guide that I could offer you. I would agree with you that there is an intense period around book launches. There's also intense periods of publicity around tours. So if an international author is visiting separate from the release of a book, there'll be a lot of intense work on the publicity at that time. And around like things like award wins or other big events
That. Yeah. So in terms of approaching publicity for a particular author or a particular book, what sort of thing what collection of things land in your lap and you go, this one is easy. Like, I got this in the bag.
Okay, that would never happen. Okay. That just never happens.
Ouch, Jane.
Because it's just not,
there is no perfect combination.
So
you invent the hook, I guess. Is that
No, sometimes
it?
There are hooks, immediate hooks, very apparent hooks. But as, like, we were talking earlier about the difference between marketing and publicity.
Yeah.
Is that I'm not, it's not a there's nothing transactional about this. It's not nothing certain. No one owes me any publicity. No one owes an author or a book any publicity. Everything is constantly in flux. Even if I had some huge in with an editor and, you know, I've got some incriminating evidence about them and they just have to do everything I want, we can only dream. Even if that happened, that editor has a boss.
Yes.
And that editor has ads to run and has conflicting interests within the whatever paper or website they're working on. Even they don't have 100% of control over what they're doing. So it's everything has to be negotiated, every element of a publicity campaign. Nothing is inevitable. Every piece of publicity is earned. If you're an author and you've gotten any publicity, that is a small miracle. Like,
right.
It's, none of it is, I would never take any publicity for granted.
I mean, that's sort of my next question. A lot of people do get upset about the amount of publicity that they receive. What's your take on that? You really saying that publicity is a pretty tough game? People have inflated expectations?
I would never say to someone that they had unrealistic expectations, but I would say that
I think as a novice, you can have unrealistic expectations. So absolutely,
like what would? Well, what's an example of something you might think?
I mean, and I'm not talking about my own. I thought it was amazing the level of publicity that I got. But say, for example, sales is a thing that people can and not really have an appreciation of. You know, particularly people who are outside of the literary sector. You know. You just have no sense of what the benchmark is or what normal looks
totally.
Like.
Totally.
You're operating in a vacuum.
And I think the book industry in particular can be really cagey. And like it is hard to know what is normal and like what is a realistic expectation. I think most publicists that I know and I work with, if you are pretty good at being frank about expectations that authors should have. But even then, it's like you don't know if there's a miscommunication unless you've had a communication about the miscommunication. I think having any expectations about publicity, granted, I don't earn a huge amount of money, but I would never put money on any publicity happening under any circumstances.
Which is very interesting in the context of a lot of authors do talk about, which is something I found very surprising, the idea of engaging their own publicity person in addition to what the publisher is doing, which really is premised on the understanding that effort equals results equals sales, I guess, or an increase in profile. Whereas effort doesn't necessarily, that is not necessarily an equation that holds true, which, or is it?
I think it does hold true. I think if you're, I just wouldn't think that it's like, I think more effort will usually equal more publicity.
Yeah.
But just because someone hasn't gotten a lot of publicity doesn't mean there hasn't been a lot of effort
put in. Yeah.
And someone who gets a lot of publicity, they might have got that publicity without as much effort. But even in that instance, effort had been put into both of those campaigns, my worldview is that they would get more publicity. I do believe there is an element of like
grind. There is
grind.
A relationship
between. Yeah. But I wouldn't jump to the assumption that just because you haven't gotten a lot of publicity, it's because someone hasn't put in effort.
I guess that's – so I was reading a Facebook thread on – it wasn't Binders, but a similar type of thing, where an author had sort of said, you know, could you tell me a good publicist? She was wanting to pay for her own publicity and was sort of saying, you know, what sorts of things? Do they tell you how many articles they pitch? Do they do this and this? And there seemed to be two camps in the sense that one camp was saying, yes, I pay for my own publicity. These are the sorts of things that they do and was really on board with that idea. Whereas another was sort of saying, I expect my publisher to do that. You know, I got taken around to bookshops. I did a book tour, all this sort of stuff. And the camp that was saying, I'm considering paying, was sort of saying, well, where's my bookshop tour? Like, where's my, where is all this for me? So from a publicist point of view, how do you mount an argument for a book tour, for example? Or
Okay, so something like bookshop visits.
Yeah.
I might just push them a little bit to the side because they're not, it's not always immediately apparent that that's the domain of publicity.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's the domain of sales and sometimes it's the domain of marketing.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is the domain of publicity, but that's not something that's that most everyone would consider is a publicity, part of publicity.
You also realize when you do bookshop visits, there are so many authors doing books. Like if you work in a bookstore, you must literally be on a Saturday, 10 authors are coming.
Like, yeah.
It's extraordinary.
How do you, when you did them, how did you feel?
It was exciting. Yeah, it's good. It's like, I like bookshops.
Yeah.
You sort of find yourself walk, like there's that amazing bookshop in Sydney that's massive. So it's sort of interesting from that point of view. And it's nice. I mean, you do see bookshops where you get to meet the owner and you actually have a conversation with the owner. And that's really nice. That's a really intimate exchange with someone who really likes books.
Yeah.
But then other ones, you know, it's more Susan who's in high school, you know, and says, oh, yeah, he's a pen.
Yeah.
You know, like it really varies.
Yes, poor Susan. Susan's got a pen. She doesn't have much going for it.
Give you really nice pens to sign.
Yeah, I'm – that's
weird. I remember going around with you, though, in Sydney, and I think we were a bit delirious at that point and just probably being fairly immature and giggly. And that was me more than
I think that's a fair assessment of me also. I think bookshop visits are valuable. Yeah, totally. I think they're really valuable. And if you're in a position to do them, I think, do. But then also, if you're not, it's like, I'm awful at this because I'm qualifying every answer. But if you don't want to do bookshop visits, I would say probably don't do them because you're not going to make a great impression.
I want to come back to handholding. let's go with book tours to start off
book
with.
Tours.
How do you decide or does the world decide?
There's an assessment made on, and sometimes it's not even made by the publicist, about what books need tours and what don't, which books don't. And so you're always trying to be discerning with the author's effort and time. But if you've made a decision that you think this is a good idea to give, to give some effort and time from the author's schedule to a book tour, it generally gets structured around events. So like public events.
Yeah.
And you would book them in whatever city you were planning them. And so that's a negotiation. That's a pitching process as well.
Right.
With sometimes it's a venue that hosts public events, like something like Melbourne's Wheeler Centre.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a bookshop. And like often bookshops will host author talks and their book selling and book signing opportunities. And so then you would structure the tour around those events and you would try and fit in some media when you can fit in some media. And it's also depending on the availability of the author, those things.
I remember, so the Helpline came out, we had the launch on a Monday night and then you and I flew to Sydney
very early
in that morning. I was going to go on Channel 10 in the afternoon. And so we went up and we had, and it was really fun, and we had.
I think, was it Channel 7 or Channel 10?
The Daily Edition.
Yeah, that's Channel 7.
Okay, Channel 7. anyway, so we met with a couple of different journalists and bits and pieces. Mm-hmm. Super, super exciting. Mm-hmm. And then we're just about to catch the cab to Channel 7. And we're like,
flashbacks.
I have told everybody in the whole world that I have ever met for about 6 months prior
I'm sorry.
Channel
7. I'm sorry this happened. Okay,
anyway, so in my head, massive. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you call them up and say, oh, we're coming in, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they had actually forgotten.
They'd forgotten,
Which I think to me really is really distills the experience of being an author, in the sense that on the one hand you're like, this is amazing, I am amazing by association, and then you have these other moments that are like, actually no one cares, or actually I'm just a normal person, you know, and normal people going about their day.
Yeah.
As a publicist spending time with people in those initial days, we did actually get on TV in the end, I think.
Thank you for repressing that memory. I love that you feel like that really distills the like the author experience, because I also think that really distills the publicity experience, in that like you can get something great and something like TV, commercial TV, and they can be interested and keen, and like this might be this imaginary person, like the producer's this imaginary person I have incriminating evidence on, and I've got all this leverage, and they have to get Catherine Kalluta on the show, otherwise I'm going public with this gossip. Even then, they might forget.
Yeah.
They just forgot to put it in the system and they were apologetic. They were so good. They were apologetic and they managed to rebook us.
They bumped Obama.
Like... Yeah, they did. I'm sorry. Sorry, Obama. And we got on the show and like, honestly, so that was like a real crisis, a little moment of like, oh my God. But it worked out fine. And also it worked out fine because you were just like so cool about it. Like there are so many other authors who might not have been as cool about it, but you were like, oh, I guess I better get my dress dry clean. Like you can wear this beautiful, you bought this beautiful dress.
Well, it was so crushed. I just remember how crushed it was.
Like your dreams.
I'm like, yes, exactly. My question was, as someone who sees and is often with the author in those first few days, weeks, however long it is, do you see those highs and lows? Like, do you actually?
I don't think I've seen.
Really momentary highs and lows.
Yeah,
like,
but also,
we're exaggerating the impact of it.
Okay, I really need to work on my like empathy skills because I'm saying I don't think I've seen a lot.
A little bit of drama.
It's all just a having said that, I don't think if you're having a book come out, I don't think that's a low.
That's true.
Struggle to think of what is the low. And
that's true. We're trying to create a bit of drama, but
and also like books last a while, you know, and so to take something that happens in the first couple of weeks of a book as some kind of oh, it's over. It's all over. Like, no.
So people are generally pretty, like, do you have to do any hand-holding?
I mean, I've never physically held a hand, I don't think. Let me think. No, I don't think I have held a hand. And I haven't had an author that has wanted that.
Do people, because I guess public speaking is a thing.
Yes.
Do authors say to you that they find it hard? Yeah. Is it negotiable? Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm not interested in publicizing an author having a bad time.
Yeah.
So if they're going to have a bad time doing public speaking or doing events, then we'll figure out another way. It's not the, like events are not the be all and end all. Like some people would say they're not even like that important in the context of a release of a book, the success of a book. Some people would argue that events aren't that important. So if you don't want to do events, fine. If you don't want to do TV, if you don't want to do radio, if you don't want to do print, that's fine. Those obviously everyone has personal boundaries. Mm. And often we don't have a lot of say on the things that we enjoy and we don't enjoy, on the things that we can do and we can't do. So no amount of me caressing someone's palms or like clammily clenching onto their mitts is going to change some core characteristic.
So creepy. Lovely. Have people ever in interviews and things where you've been watching it with, you know, have they ever made
like crashed and burned?
Enormous faux. Or you know, because there's that sort of crash and burn where you just underperform, say. Mm. But there is also something where maybe they have a particular view of their book that could be controversial or could be. Do you ever have to have discussions attempting to?
So I try to make an effort to have discussions with all my authors about what they think of their books. And I think if you've written a book and you've gone through the editorial process and everything that's led up to that, this is just how I would be. I would be thinking, what questions will people ask me about this book? How will people receive this book? What am I a bit nervous that people will ask about? And I don't really imagine that anyone's written a book and is surprised about any element of their book or surprised about how people might receive it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely the potential for that, but I don't find it very often.
Yeah.
So what I like to do is like, you know, before a book comes out, have a frank conversation with the author about like what have been your feelings when you're anticipating doing publicity for this book? Are there things that you think I should be nervous about? Are there things that you are nervous about? And often there are things, but they're not things that we should be nervous about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're such a nice publicist.
Oh, mate, I keep telling people.
Writers festivals, which is probably along that sort of events line. Mm-hmm. Writers love writers festivals.
They really do.
They do.
They love them.
Do you think they're important or not that important or more important for the writer in a community? What's your opinion?
I mean, I don't think any one individual factor here is that important. They're all just pieces of a puzzle. the diplomatic thing to say.
Some writers do get a lot of writers' festivals.
I think
they?
A lot of them. There are a lot of writers who do a lot of writers' festivals. I think writers' festivals are important because they're important to writers.
Yeah. I think that's true.
And because my authors are important to me, so what's important to them is important to me. But are writers' festivals important to me in a book being a success? I wouldn't say that is always the case. Or even often the case. Sometimes, but not.
They are fun.
Yeah. So tell me, what is this Writers' Festival fantasy?
It is. So I went to Brisbane Writers' Festival and I'm going to Storyfest this year. It's time. I suppose it's like if you do a bit of travel for a job and you don't normally travel for a job.
Yeah.
So it's, to me, it's.
It's going on camp.
It's going on camp. Yeah. Like with people that are interested in something that I'm, you know, deeply interested in as well.
Yeah.
And it's all that stuff. Like at Brisbane, we were in a hotel that hadn't even opened to the public. Like it was so plush and you just want it. Like it's that you know, and it was also like you get taken out for dinner and you know, all that sort of stuff.
It's a moment of glamour, and it's also, I imagine, writing a book is a very solitary experience. Even sometimes publicizing a book can be a very solitary experience. So to have a real communal.
And it's one of those things. It's like if you go to, I don't know, if you went to an extended family reunion, you're predisposed to like people. I feel like meeting other authors, I'm predisposed to like.
This is
in
so lovely.
Ways.
Yeah.
And it's potluck because you don't know who, you know, you particularly, like I remember the dinner, you know, it's like 10 different completely random authors and some you're like weird, others you're like, you're amazing.
Yep.
It's cool.
Okay. So this is, this has prompted me that we need to do more text author things in Melbourne. Most of us are in Melbourne and like we have really engaged authors who love text and love what we do and love that. Like we're lucky that most
they're great authors.
Edit that. All textbooks are great, and all our authors are lovely. And so when we do hang out, we all like hanging out. So we should do more of that, definitely. And I can definitely understand what you're saying about the value of them, and that's probably they play a hugely important part in the Australian book industry. They're really important, those festivals, and they happen because programmers and festival directors are so doggedly passionate, and it's often a very thankless task. And they do it because of the things that you just spoke about how it's so important for authors and the literary community to engage with each other and to discuss issues that affect all of us and to celebrate the amazing work we
it's
do.
A good industry. Sorry,
it is a good
checking.
Industry.
Really,
you should be in publicity.
I'm so sorry. I was just quickly checking what my next question was, just a bit random. So sometimes they put in a line where you can donate your fee. What do you think about fee donation? Are they keeping do they put? Should you donate your fee? Should you?
The arts industries in Australia are so underfunded.
I know.
No, that no one is keeping track of who is donating fees and who is not. No one, that is a level of administration that is not happening. So whatever is working for you. I would say there's not always a ton of money in the book industry. Take what you can get is my attitude.
Okay, I'm down with that.
Other people aren't getting paid. You know, if other people are getting paid.
I'm in two minds about that. Kate and I had a discussion on a different episode about, do you remember a regional library had contacted me about doing a speech? And I ended up, like I quoted the ASA rates for a one-hour visit. And then I sort of said, oh, but it's probably travel time because it was, say, 5 hours away. And then I sent so a third email saying, but I'd probably need to stay overnight. So this quote for a one thing visit, you know, suddenly you're sort of saying, oh, that could be $1,000 for a debut. Mm. Like it just, I see both sides to it.
Yeah. And so it's a real personal decision because I do things for free because I get something out of them. But me personally, I get something out of it or I think it's important. But not everyone is in a position to make that kind of decision. That's a luxury to decide to do something for free. And that is the individual's choice. And so I would never, I mean, there are people who make these great arguments, and I don't know that I can disagree with them, that, you know, that you're undercutting other people if you don't accept a fee and there's some huge moral obligation. And like that, when people make those arguments to me, they sound pretty reasonable, you know. But then also when someone says, well, I just want to do something nice, who am I to begrudge someone for, you know. It's so true. Great answer. What else do you want me to solve?
Okay, we're on to the final thing.
Yeah.
Book recommendations. What's your favourite novel by a debut author?
So this is a book I've worked on, and it's my favourite debut novel I've worked on. It is by a very glamorous young author called Catherine Collette. It's called The Helpline. I love it because it is so, and I've given it to all my family members to read, and I paid for it and I gave it to them.
For more information on this episode of the podcast, check out our show notes at thefirsttimepodcast.com or get in touch via Twitter or Instagram at thefirsttimepod.
You've been listening to The First Time Podcast, a podcast about the first and second time you publish a book. We recorded this episode at RMIT University on the traditional land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. This podcast is produced by Phoebe Adie. The First Time Podcast is supported by Writers Victoria, ACT Writers Centre, RMIT School of Media and Communication, and by our wonderful supporters on Patreon. You too can become a supporter of our podcast by heading to our Patreon site, www.patreon.com/thefirsttimepodcast.